The third eye is of course universal. In Sanskrit text, it is given a variety of names. For example, Gyana Chakshu, the eye of knowledge. You may also have seen it represented as a jewel on the forehead of statues of Buddhas. There are also multiple references to it in Western spiritual literature, as in the verse of the Gospel of Matthew. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is single, your whole body shall be full of light. Or take Neoplatonism, the stream founded by Plotinus in the 3rd century. When asked how the soul could return to a state of unity with the One, Plotinus answered, "Not with a carriage or a boat, but by shutting your eyes and awakening to another level of vision, which is in everyone, but which very few ever use." So, what makes the third eye so interesting for meditation? This question is going to lead us to discuss the very essence of meditation. An analogy found in Sanskrit texts is that of the coconut. Coconuts have three eyes, three dark spots. If you try to pierce the coconut, you'll find that two of the eyes are blind. You can't go through them. Only the third eye, the one that is in the center and above the two others, can be pierced. The third eye is the one that leads inside, to the precious coconut juice. The Upanishads have another analogy. The body as a city with 10 gates. Of the 10 gates, 9 lead to the external world. The eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, the anus, and the urethra. The third eye is the 10th gate, the one that leads inside, not outside. Behind this there is a whole theory of consciousness. Through the physical senses, consciousness is externalized. It is drawn into the physical world. The experience isn't recognized because it is constant. From morning to night, from birth to death, each time you open your eyes, your consciousness takes on a certain flavor that is conditioned by the objects of perception. The result is a certain gravity, a loss of essence. To better conceptualize this, picture a raging party held at your house with 100 guests. They are everywhere, not just in the lounge, but in every bedroom, every bathroom, even the cupboards. And the music is so loud that it can be heard 100 meters away. You may thoroughly enjoy the event, but when the guests go home, there's a certain sigh of relief. Now you can rest. Reclaim your space. Be yourself. But what if the party was to go on and on? For a whole week? For a whole year? For your entire life? You'd be turned into a facade. Someone with a pretty smile at best, but no inner life, and a serious problem of centering. The analogy sounds extreme, but it is a fairly accurate depiction of the loss of integrity caused by constant exposure to sensory input. Each time you hear a noise, each time you see an object or a person, your awareness takes on a certain shape or flavor conditioned by the object of perception. There are virtually no interruptions, apart from sleep, when awareness itself is interrupted. If, however, you go through the 10th gate and turn your consciousness inside, then there is awareness. Not awareness of external objects, just awareness. The movement is no longer centrifugal, as in being drawn into the external world. It is centripetal, consciousness turning onto itself, which is exactly what meditation is about. One of the key realizations is that in a meditation state, when consciousness turns onto itself, what happens isn't an internalization. It is a de-externalization. We're not talking about some strange gymnastics here, turning consciousness inside out. It is the world that constantly turns consciousness inside out. And it has happened so much and for so long that no one even notices it anymore. Through meditation, consciousness is restored to its original integrity, turned back onto itself. Then you can be